The views expressed on the following show may not be those of the hosts, guests, or WSPN Skidmore Radio. Talk Saratoga is produced by Saratoga Broadcasting Incorporated and may not be reproduced in part or in whole unless expressed written approval is given. Now, here are the hosts of Talk Saratoga, Rick Thompson and a Saratoga All-Star.
Okay, you're with two people today. I'm your host, Rick Thompson, and our co-host is Saratoga All-Star, Tony Podlaski, who is celebrating Christmas in the way that Christmas should have been celebrated on the secular side, not the religious side. But good morning, Ski.
Good morning, Rick. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing great. How about you?
I'm into the spirit now after spending the last 16 weeks of grading papers and teaching students and doing committee work and so forth. It's time to at least have a little bit of downtime before I start back up in January.
Yeah, you know, I just want to mention to those, Tony's been on the show really quite a few times, and for those of you that don't know, he is a English professor at Hudson Valley Community College, and his grading time, as I know, you don't send him any messages. If you do, short answers, he's so busy.
Well, if it's not short answers, it's no response at all, and my family's come to the realization, more so my wife, Linda, that once I'm down in the finished basement, I'm not coming up for a week, and there's a do not disturb sign, because I have so many papers spread out through the sofa downstairs and on the floor and everything else.
Well, you know, you did take time out last week to go out to lunch for our Christmas lunch, and we had a pretty good time.
Yeah. Well, that was at the tail end of the semester, so most of my papers were graded at that point. It was just putting everything into a grade book.
Yeah, we had, chicken liver Tim Wilkin from the Times Union, who was here one time for our Christmas show, but kind of didn't want to come this time. Yeah, because he didn't want to get up early. And
And I actually have to do his picks for tomorrow for the Times Union.
Oh, you do?
Yes, since he'll be out.
Oh, that's right. He goes to Rochester, doesn't he, for Christmas. So you're doing the picks tomorrow.
Yeah, well, he's out in Rochester with his brother Jeff Wilkin, who has still in part of working with the Schenectady Gazette.
Right. How... I thought I had something on my stick here, but I didn't transfer over. And Tim's a great guy. We have a lot of fun with him, and more so you, because you've known him for probably 40 years now. So
it seems like 40 years. And just doing a little bit of reflection here, it's been about actually a little over 24 years. I met Tim with several others when I first started the Times Union in 94, and along with Tim Wilkin, I also was introduced to Matt Graves, who we lost earlier this year, after battling leukemia. Then his wife Debbie was a few months later from passed away from brain tumor. But I've known pretty much a lot of the people from the Times Union, over almost a quarter of a century when I'm starting to think about it here. But Tim came out of a pretty unique generation. That included Matt Graves, Bill Arsenal, who's still he's traveling around I think he's traveling around the world, but mostly he's traveling around the country in his RV, enjoying retirement. And the late Ron Armstrong was part of that group as well. It was a pretty interesting generation, and I was glad to be part of it.
When you do think of things like that in the past, it seems like you can't duplicate. The good times that you shared with quite a few people. It doesn't seem like when we lose them that they're replaced by, they're not replaced.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of it has to do with the culture of the business changed as well. you know, and I think technology has played a part of that culture as well, especially when we are looking at social media as being the integral part of that, where we have just instant information and don't necessarily have to be in a press box or in a newsroom to have that that information released quickly.
Yeah, but it helps.
Yeah, it does help. Yeah,
I mean,
it's just there's a little more, or I should say, less connection, personal connection with a lot of the people who are still involved or who are now involved in the media, but may not be in a press box every day. They may be more on the grounds or covering some event, or maybe not in a newsroom, but just typing or writing the story elsewhere. Even on a small laptop.
Yeah. You know what? I think we talked about this last time you were in. With social media or blogging or getting bigger, I know the press box is losing a lot of the writing people, because a lot of newspapers today aren't covering it. I mean, I remember when we had... Well, when I came, it was at the tail end of weaning down. I mean, right. You, my gosh, were there when that place was full. I mean, Bozart, and then did Anthony write for the Post?
He was part of the Post team with John DeSilva, Eddie Fontaine, and I'm trying to remember, there's one other one, I believe it was Debbie Little, who was part of the handicapping crew. But for the most part, it was pretty much... John DeSilva, Eddie Fontaine, and then Anthony Affronti would come up periodically during the meet to maybe do additional assignments with him. But he was more on the desk when he was with the New York Post.
Okay. Yeah, and I mean, they've been backing out little by little, and I don't understand it, especially down in New York where the tracks are open mostly year-round,
Well, I think you have to kind of look at what gets priority coverage, and at the same time, too, who's reading the newspaper. I mean, a newspaper... is somewhat of a luxury now to some extent when you're looking at the price of buying a newspaper. It's you're easily paying $2.50 to $3 for a Sunday paper. On a daily, you're looking at from $1 to $1.50, and not everyone can afford that information and to carry it with them to work or where they need to be.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's nice to see it full and the big race days,
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's good to have that part of it. But if you kind of look at those big race days, whether it be the Travers, the Whitney, or even closing weekend for that matter as well of the race meet, think of, 25 years ago when every day was like this. And the really unique personalities that were, that were part of that press box that definitely you can write a book on each person.
Oh, yeah.
What they brought to the press box.
Oh, they were characters for sure.
Yes.
I mean, and we had some towards, like I say, when I got there, we had some people that didn't belong in the press box that I had to chase all over the grounds.
Yeah, I mean, you are bringing up one aspect here is the aspect of credibility, and not necessarily saying the person's good or bad, it's just what's their expertise and what's their knowledge, especially when we're looking at blogging in particular. How many people have the credentials or the credibility to cover racing other than just saying, oh, I'm a racing fan and here are my thoughts, or have they been on the backstretch, have they talked to some of the horsemen that go beyond the mainstream of, let's say, Chad Brown, Todd Pletcher, Belmont. Do they talk to some of some of the non-mainstream trainers or other horsemen part of working with that? So I think it's one of the challenges of trying to determine who has access is just the credibility.
Yeah.
But at the same time, too, you want to give those people an opportunity as well.
Well, you're very well respected up there. And I don't know if you saw Kimberly's post on Facebook.
Yep.
And I thought that was very nice.
She's been an awesome person, and I've been very fortunate to meet her this summer. Coming up from Maryland, and now doing a lot of work with the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation, not only in here in Saratoga but throughout the country now as well. I know she had spent a few weeks in Kentucky around the Breeders' Cup to really just not only just raise awareness, obviously, but also generate fundraising as well.
Fundraising for the aftercare.
Right. Yeah, it's not. I remember doing a story over the summer for Saratoga Today about this in regards to veterinarian care, and it's not necessarily about where they need a major. These retired horses need a major overhaul. It's just more so trying to determine what they need or what they're capable of doing.
Right,
and it can be costly very quickly for just a an initial fee. It could be at least an overall physical, I should say, between $150 to $200. Then, if the horse needs some teeth work, then you add another $7,500 on that. And then It's just a lot of these things just add up really quickly. And once when a horse is racing, whatever purse money they make can cover that that cost. But once they're done racing, where's that money come from at that point?
Well, I know she was a guest on the first Saturday in December, and like I say, just like you, we became good friends, mm-hmm. and once in a while we'll chat back and forth. I have a lot of respect for her. She's very bubbly, and she's very committed to her position as, raising funds for these. I think she said that she visits 7 or 8 places in the country. But she loves it here. I mean, she moved here because she loves the area. But she was saying, and it was funny because some of these horses can live to be to quite a ripe old age. She said the longest horse they had that lived the longest was 35 years old.
Yeah, that's a quick call. He's down. He's still at Walk Hill. I actually had done a story on him. Oh, gosh, it has to be at least 2 or 3 years ago. And I remember talking to a few people, even the stable manager at Walk Hill, and he's still strong. And obviously, he's not as as solid as he was. He's a little more frail, but especially for his dietary intake. But he has his unique personality that he's independent. He would prefer to be alone rather than with other horses. But they say he's still strong at 35. Well, then it was 33, I believe, or 32 at that point. But yeah, I believe he's the oldest retirement horse, or at least retired horse that's still in existence. And most horses are between 20 to 25 their life expectancy, but he has definitely surpassed that life expectancy.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah,
but it was funny because I said, well, what is it they had a fundraiser. I'm sure you got a letter in the mail.
Yes.
But she was saying that the biggest thing that they need right now, and this is probably the same way, is hay. Mm-hmm. Because they, when you look at how well they take care of the horses, it's amazing. And they do try to, I don't want to say recycle the horses, but, if people have bought them to use in shows and different things, but mainly, it's the aftercare. Right. The horses don't want for anything.
Yeah, it is trying to find a second life form, and that's where the story I had done over the summer where these vets would come in, donate their services to determine what the horses were capable of doing, whether they were good for trail riding, whether they were going to be good for maybe equestrian purposes, maybe they could be used for just even working with prisoners at Walk Hill to just give them a skill set once they once they've served their the time that mm-hmm. If they wanted to go into the horse care industry, they know how to be a groom, or they know how to take care of a horse. So I think that's one of the things they really, at least with what Kim does, is just they do try to find a home for these horses and where they have a purpose.
Because you don't want, she wouldn't use the word, but you wouldn't want them retired to the glue factory or anything because they still have a great value and life.
Yeah, definitely. That is the goal. It's no different. And in fact, I put a different spin on it here as well because my wife and I did this over the summer, actually September after our pug had passed away. Cash at 14, he was a retired show dog, and he was adopted, and we decided to take care of him, be a family pet. But then the end of September, just a couple months after Cash had passed, we ended up going back to the same owner, breeder, handler, to adopt another pug. But this time what we're doing is we're training her to be a therapy dog.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what, that's kind of giving the dog a second life. Now, nothing was going to happen to any of these retired show dogs. But they, basically, because they easily get adopted.
Right.
But it's just, what do we want to do with, with an adopted, pug? Well, we figured, okay, let's make her into a therapy dog. And, pugs are definitely ideal for,
sure.
For attention and for therapeutic use as well.
Well, I saw she graduated
yes.
in her first section, because she had a cap on. I didn't see the gown, but
no, the cap was sufficient at that point. It's basically the beginner class, I think, was pretty easy for her, being she knows some of the basic commands. It's now okay getting to the intermediate and advanced, where she would need to know how to stay a little bit longer. Basically, the stay command for beginners is like 5 seconds. For the next level, it's, I think, supposed to be 15 seconds.
Yeah.
And that's when you have to figure out, can she have that sustainability to be able to just stay in one position for 15 seconds. We've done it, and she's been good with that part. But there's some other commands that she has to start learning at a little more advanced.
Oh, yeah. Now, we had our pit bull that passed away, it's a week from tomorrow, and we got a new one.
Right, I remember you saying it.
Right, but she would, Sally, our first one, you could put food on the floor, and she'll sit right in front of it. And I'll never forget, it was at Thanksgiving. And Peg says, give her a little piece of turkey. So I put a piece of turkey down, and she sat there. And we're talking and didn't do anything, and Peg looked probably 2 minutes later, and Sally's still sitting there looking at the turkey. She goes, did you release her yet? And I said, no. And I said, okay, Sally, you can have it. And she got the turkey. But I'll tell you, dogs are amazing.
Yeah, pugs are not that. when food drops, they are immediately there.
Right
on it. And even if you did the release and food drops, it's not going to work.
No.
It's once that food drops, it's all theirs.
It's theirs.
Yes, that is one of the downfalls to pugs, is that they have no concept of what their stomach can hold.
Right. Well, I mean, look, I'll tell you, when I was carving a turkey or ham for the holidays and a piece fell on the floor, she was right on top of it. I didn't, say stay or sit, But, hey, listen, what are some of the highlights of year 2018?
Well, I think the highlight, a couple personal parts of it, I think the first one being my younger daughter graduating from high school and then heading off to Union College. That was probably the one of the highlights, because now I have the house to myself. My wife and I have the house to myself. In all seriousness, it's good to watch young, and I see this all the time every semester, fall semester, of young, now they're no longer teenagers, they're young adults. And now that, I have the ability to shape them, at least in their writing skills, but just watching them starting to grow, at now as an adult.
Sure.
I think it's definitely a highlight to see at that point. yes, definitely that was one of the highlights. And I think, and there's others as well, but I think professionally, for me, was receiving the SUNY Chancellor Award. That, to me, that's, as I said before, a distinguished honor to receive, or at least to be recognized for faculty excellence. And, and that, to me, that still means a lot. The stuff is still sitting on my desk. It's not hung up or anything. The placard and the medallion, they're just like somewhere in the corner of my office, buried probably underneath a bunch of papers, but kind of shows you where I'm at least at this point in my career. It's just, I got so many other things going on that ends up, everything else becomes secondary.
Well, it's funny, because when you watch a Yankee game, Paul O'Neill is one of the announcers for the Yankee game, and he says that all the awards he's won, his wife hides them under the bed. And he says, it's just amazing. He said he just can't put it, he doesn't have a room to put his awards, and I just thought that was kind of funny. But anyway, it's, I know you've gotten quite a bit of added duties, and not just teaching, and all of them are because of your accomplishments, right, that, you know, they keep giving you titles and more work to do, but like I say, it's only because of your
yeah, I don't complain about what I do. I embrace what I do, because if you complain, you know, there's no point of being there at that point. It's the job, or in this case here, the career, is no longer fun. But yeah, I think all of us have a lot of work to do, and it's just a matter of how we manage it. And but to me, it's just more about embracing it and just realizing that, being very fortunate in the position I'm in, to not only just teach but also do service for the college as well. And that's, and I think it's, you know, part of the, you know, any, I think anyone should be, you know, trying to take that approach. It's like, what can you do not only as part of your job, but going beyond to move, you know, whether it's a company for it or a college for it or whatever it may be. And you just continue with that momentum.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, you're also adding to your list, which is always good to do. I mean, someday you'll be scooped up by Harvard or Yale. And
no, I'm happy with what I'm doing right now with working with 2 year college students. And again, and maybe because I'm a former community college student myself, and mm-hmm. And I understand a lot what each student comes, you know, at least comes to college, and at least their mindset, and knowing some of their experiences. I mean, it could be just working plus going to school, trying to figure out how to balance things with that kind of a schedule, and even going through some of the things that they did at 19 years old. I mean, I was not innocent at 18 or 19 by any means, but I understand where they're coming from.
Sure.
One of the mindset doesn't change by generation. I mean, they're still going to do things that I probably did, 18, 19 years old. But it's a matter of just trying to have them grow at the same time.
Sure. Hey, listen, you're listening to WSPN 91.1 FM Skidmore Radio. And if you want to give us a call, the number is 518-580-5783. 518-580-5783, and we'd love to hear from you. Well, I can attest to your relating to younger people, because I've seen you in action when either interns or friends of mine, whether it be their children or just friends that I know who are younger that need advice on college, and you tell me, Matt, just bring them up, you know, I'll talk to them. And they always come down very happy that they've done so. And that takes a special person to do that. I mean, and that's amazing.
Well, I think that's what, you know, the incoming, we call them incoming freshmen, that they're looking for guidance. And even I think, and I went through it actually with a recent high school reunion just a couple of days after Thanksgiving, and their children are just a couple of years younger than my daughters. And they've asked me, it's like, well, what do you recommend? It's like, well, it depends on what they want to explore. And then from there, I can say, well, these are some options that they could look at. And I think, you know, that, you know, having that knowledge and being able to share it with them, again, even with my own experience, hopefully they get onto at least a guided pathway.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that I wanted to touch upon was, we can get back to you. Mm-hmm. This has been a crazy year also for losing movie stars and important people in all different kinds of fields. There are some that, you know, the amazing thing about, we say time goes by so fast, but when you stop and think and look back at, you know, like I pulled up celebrities that we lost, and you'd say, my gosh, I can't believe it, or it's been that long, you know. A couple of the people that we lost, Jerry Van Dyke, who was Dick Van Dyke's brother. We lost him earlier on in the year. And one really, I remember when he passed away, but it just, I don't know, his name was John Mahoney. Now, for those of you who don't know the name, I mean, he was a great character actor, but he played Frasier's father.
Right.
And Frasier. And it's so long ago. And when you hear a name in the news, you know, actor so-and-so passed away, you really can't associate with him with something. And then when you see what he was, you know, associated with, another one was David Ogden Stiers. Now, that name, I mean, you know, but he played a doctor on MASH. He was the, I think, from Boston, a very high, you know, falutin doctor. And it's just, it's funny when you try to associate the names with what they did. Now, I know Dolores O'Riordan, who was a singer in the music group The Cranberries. And I liked some of their music, and she died very young. I think she was in her mid-40s. It was an unfortunate thing. She drowned because of alcohol. You know, she was inebriated and drowned, and that's sad because that could have been prevented. But I don't know. You look at this stuff, and, you know, Aretha Franklin we lost, and Margot Kidder.
Yep.
Who was in Superman.
Superman's girlfriend.
Yeah, and
Lois Lane.
And, of course, both Bushes, Barbara Bush and George H.W. Yep. Bush, passed away. And matter of fact, you know, I read a story on George Bush's passing, and he said he wanted to go before Christmas. And that was a wish that he wanted. And I don't know, that seems pretty neat that only that he... passed away when he wanted to, but is there anybody that you know that you remember, you know, that made an impression on you?
I think personally, this past year was Matt Graves. As we start off the program itself, Matt was my mentor for 24 years. He was also someone who I idolized when I was a teenager with his writing and his columns. And I still have it today. One of his probably best columns was a story about Ali Muse, how they disqualified the wrong horse. And this was in the, I believe it was late 80s. I'm trying to remember the date more specifically. But one of the best lines that he had in his column, this happened at Aqueduct, they would have burned the place down. And it was that kind of writing that I think just appealed to me. Just reading Matt's columns every week.
We'll get back to that because there was morning caller.
Good morning, Rick. It's Uncle Jack.
How are you?
I'm fine, Rick. You're talking about people that passed away, and you know that we've got a special one here.
Yes,
and I just want to enlighten you a little bit. I've had wonderful support from the family and my neighbors, and Marie was such a special person.
Yes, she was.
In order to survive, they tell me the spouses survive only about 8 months after they lose their spouse. I'm planning to live a lot longer.
I hope you do. Young, I hope you do.
And I plan to write a series of books that'll put a new light on seniority. They've stereotyped us into passe people. We're not passe people. We're special people. And Marie was 93 years old. And... well, I could go on and on. This is your program.
Oh,
you want to talk about horses, but I want to talk about seniors.
No, we're talking about anything today. We want to talk about Christmas stories. If you have a Christmas story, or or you know, this is kind of a year-end show, and yeah. Tony yeah. and I are talking about, you know.
Well, I want to tell you something. The older we get, the smarter we get. We may lose our memories, and we may be forgetful and doddering and that sort of thing, but we are smarter.
Well, we're smarter, I think, too, because we have a lot more experience behind us.
Right, yeah. So it's aging is nothing to fear. It's something to savor.
And, it is. It better
so
be.
I think I've said enough, haven't I?
Yeah, hey, look, you know, we're anxious to get that first book signed. I want a signed copy. You know, I mean, okay. I want to buy one on Amazon. I want a signed copy.
Okay.
All right, Uncle Jack, you take care.
Love to the family.
And the same there, and Merry Christmas.
I'm enjoying your guest. He's very knowledgeable and very good.
Well, he's quite a guy.
You have special people on your show.
Yes. They're all very nice people, and Tony happens to be a good friend. We met at the track and got to be close friends, and I'm thankful for that. But we do have nice people on the show, and hopefully we'll continue to do that.
Have a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Okay, same to you, and wish everybody down there the same.
Okay.
Okay,
bye-bye.
Yes, that's somebody, as people know from the past couple of weeks, that I lost, and of course, my uncle lost. And
right.
This year was my aunt, who was 93 years old, passed away. She was active up till probably a couple weeks before she passed away, still doing crossword puzzles, still very active, and we can only hope that we can, if you live to be older, that we're still can do things and not just sitting around.
Yeah, I think one of the things, I was just listening to Uncle Jack a moment ago, and he's right about two things. One, it's as we get older, you know, we do get smarter, and I think you're right about the experience being part of that. And I think that's how we end up being more knowledgeable, that we, you know, whether it be avoiding making mistakes or learning something new, mm-hmm. it is all about experience. And I think the other part of it too is just as we get older, knowing that time's getting a lot shorter, that, you know, it's a matter of just trying to cherish as much as you have at that point, and not taking anything for granted. Definitely that's,
it's a learning experience when you get older, because when you're younger, I think nothing bothers you. You plow ahead without thinking of the consequences.
That's again, it's 18, 19 years old.
That's right. That's right.
And you try to, and again, it's the toughest part, I think, being the teacher of young adults is trying to, and to me, it goes beyond just working with their writing skills, because I want them to learn not only about the world around them, but more importantly, have them learn about themselves. Mm-hmm. And it's sometimes, and if someone took that approach to me, you know, when I was 18, 19, I may have just shrugged it off. It's like, oh yeah, it's just some, you know, somebody older who's just kind of just ranting and just giving me some cheap advice. But realizing that, you know, if they're struggling in life, you know, that's where they need somebody the most. They need somebody to kind of almost mentor them through life sometimes. and that's, I think, one of the things that, you know, I do enjoy working with students, that if they are struggling, kind of, you know, help, you know, get them to the right resources. And then over 2 years, if they're sticking with the program, you watch them graduate, and to me, it's something I enjoy every year. Is just the graduation, because I get to see former students, maybe being the first generation of their family graduating from college.
Sure, you know, one of the things you had mentioned was about. You know, when you get older, we have more experience. And when I went to pick up the key for the studio from the security guard, I said, "How you doing?" And he goes, "Pretty good." And he said, "I can't believe when I put the date down to sign in." I said, "Oh, it's the 21st, right?" He goes, "No, it's the 22nd, and I don't know where they're going to." And he said, "This is what happens. he says, over 50, the days go by faster. And I said, well, you know what? When you're younger, you can't wait for things to go by, different chapters in your life, getting out of high school, getting out of college, getting that first job. And then you get to be a certain age and you relish in the fact, I'm really having a good time. But then you realize it's 10 years later.
Yeah.
And time does go by faster. And, you want to kind of hold it back, but yeah, there's nothing you can do. So my way of thinking is, do something every day that matters. And and that's how I think you can justify the time going by fast,
Definitely.
I saw, my wife pointed out to me that, I don't think we do enough to help people in our communities. There's things that we could get involved in that a lot of people today, because they're busy, they just don't do it. But she was telling me about this baseball player that had donated $2 million and went down to some country, I forgot what it was, and teaching for education and living condition. And then there was a football player who went to two big department stores, I think Target, and I can't remember the name of the other one, and he went and he paid for all of the layaways for everybody that had a layaway. He paid for everyone in Target and everyone in the other store. And the people, when they went to pick up their layaways and when they said, I'll take paid for you, don't know a thing. I mean, those are things that you do in the background that you don't want people to know. Some reporter got a hold of the story, probably because some clerk told him. But George Steinbrenner's father, George said at one time, his father gave him advice that if you do something for people, the only right way to do it is not to be known for doing it. Mm-hmm. You do it because you want to do something better.
Right. It's about making a difference.
Right.
It's what it really comes down to.
And, our country is one of the most well-off countries in the world, yet there's so many people that need things. We talked about this maybe 3 weeks ago with the guests that I had. The problem is that there's so many people that in different categories. We have a lot of homeless people, and mm-hmm. some of it is mental health needs that they're not getting. Two are just people just want to live that way. They don't want responsibilities for anything. And three is they just run into hard times.
Yeah.
And they need that extra kick. And in Saratoga, we're fortunate to have a couple different organizations that they can find, a warm bed and food, and they'll help you get on the right path. So I don't know what what the answer is, but there's a lot more that can be done.
Yeah, I think you're right about, at least to me, two of those three things do work in tandem in regards to hard times and mental health illness. And just find some way to find those resources for anyone who is, whether it is about depression or whether it is some other mental health illness that's really impacting that person to move forward, to get out of that hard time. And that's one of the things I see with students that I see often, is that many of them are going through a tough time emotionally, and most of it is depression. And, and I'll get into the right direction to where they can work with someone, a counselor, or at least find the resource to work with the counselor itself. But because of that, sometimes they're impacted. Because of that, their academics are impacted. And,
sure.
And they're not performing as well as I know they can do. Because I could see in class one, they could be in class every other day if it's a 3-day-a-week class. And they may be participating, doing the in-class activity. But when it comes time doing the assignment outside of class, they're struggling, and why are they struggling with that? And a lot of times it's not the skill set they have for writing. There's something else that's getting in. And a lot of times it could be that emotional component or that mental health illness component. In this case here, a lot of times it's depression.
Oh, definitely. But, you know, there's so many things. And excuse me. What you would like is that feeling that we have, let's say, for the month of December, you know, that feel-good feeling because of the holidays, that we could harness some of those feelings during the year. Because, you know, at this time of the year, we'd pretty much do everything that we could to help someone, because it's that time of the year. We talked last week about, you know, you walk the streets, you say hi to people, they say hi back, Merry Christmas. You could do that in July and they'll look at you like you're an alien. And it's really something that, you know, it's too bad that happens. But I had a tough experience this week, and you would hope that people... you could stop this. There was a young man 2 years ago. I'm on the board of a local credit union, and we give two $1,000 scholarships away to students that fill out the form and their story and their marks and that. And the credit union board used to look at the applications and we'd pick out the two that we wanted. Well, there was a there was a student who had marks in the low 90s and didn't come in the top two, but we kind of pushed for him to get a scholarship, which was very unusual because we never gave more than two.
Right.
But he had a tough family life, and but he did do academically well, so we gave him the scholarship. He went, it went at the annual meeting. He got up and he thanked everybody. I mean, he said, I knew that I'd never get a scholarship, and you know, I appreciate it so much. And this is why now we let the credit union league do the analyzing the applications. But he went to Albany Pharmacy College. And we just found out the other day that he committed suicide. And part of it was, you know, he had a tough family life. But the other part was he was struggling in school, even though he got very high marks. He was an excellent student and got very high marks. And I know you've probably run into some of this, and you can understand the reasons why, and you can, you know, give us a clue. But, you know, if we seek people that are struggling, that are depressed, you know, talk to them. Maybe all they need to do is to talk to somebody that'll listen, or you try and get them help. Now, I'm sure you've come across that.
Yeah, I've come, you know, 15 years of teaching, and I've seen a lot. And again, it goes back to knowing the students, and over. Usually, I'll know my students within the first 2 weeks, you know, by their first name at that point. I also know their personality, so I can kind of get an idea if something, you know, if is not in sync or if something's not working within that day. If they're struggling with a lesson, they can go always, you know, talk to the student outside of class, and they're encouraging them to meet with me and say, hey, let's take a look at, you know, whether it be grammar or the essay itself, whatever it may be. But if they are... You know, if they've been participating, all of a sudden one day they're just distant. And at that point, I'll touch base with the student after class and say, you know, is everything all right? And, you know, sometimes they may be hesitant to say anything, which is understandable. But I will say I've noticed it's not as much as in the spring semester, but definitely in the fall semester. By the time November, mid-November comes around, that's when I really see the challenges that some of these students experience. And especially the depression aspect. You mentioned a moment ago, just even around the holiday season, you know, people are upbeat. Also, the flip side of it as well, there's some people just have a hard time with the holiday season. And with that said, whether it is family related or maybe some other personal factors may come into place, it's going to start setting in as maybe a part of depression. And at that point, it's, you know, we got to pretty much, you know, you know, see if that student is, you know, is, you know, experiencing that.
Sure. It's, you know, so even though we think that most college students are just having fun and partying it up.
Oh,
and,
no, there's a lot that that struggle with. I think the big part of it, it's not a big part, but I think it's just one aspect is identity. That they shift from who they were in high school to being an adult at a college or a university. And, you know, because of that, they may have a hard time figuring out where they fit. And because of that, they may end up getting sad, they may end up getting moody, or they may have just a hard time just experiencing some of these emotional challenges. And, you know, the first, you know, one of the first emotions coming up, you know, is just depression. You know, yeah. At that point, you know, they don't have anyone to turn to you know, to share their experience. And hopefully, you know, they come up to a faculty member or somebody at the college that they can eventually talk to, and maybe they can get them in the right direction for, you know, for help, or maybe just even to talk to them for a few minutes.
Yeah, and, you know, I don't know when he did this. We were, you know, one of the board members brought it up at our meeting on Wednesday. But I always, I find it hard to deal with something like that. I don't know why. I can't understand why people that are doing this just can't reach out to somebody. But that's my mindset. And I think if you're so low enough, you just feel you can, I guess.
It could also be spontaneous as well. It could have been just the pressure has become so overwhelming in a short amount of time that it could have, you know, again, don't know the circumstances at all of this particular person, but it could have been spontaneous as well. They just couldn't, you know, mm-hmm. basically handle the pressure. Because there is a lot of pressure for students today to perform well, whether it's to keep, you know, the financial aid, whether it is to, you know, meet the demands of family expectations, whatever it may be, or expectations of others. There's that part of it as well.
Well, I think, too, the expectation to do really well is that, I mean, you can graduate from college with a degree and find the job market out there very competitive, depending on what field you're going into. And I mean, I know you look at it as in a different way, but my feeling is too, is college is not meant for everybody. If you just can't do well in school, you know, there are trade schools that you can go to. I mean, I've always, you know, I used to substitute teach in BOCES, and I used to see students come in, and they weren't really good test takers, and but boy, I'll tell you, they were great in electrical class and great in the carpentry class, and you know, maybe that is for them.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned that, because I did see an article over the summer about this, where there's a lack of those with a trade, mm-hmm. at least, you know, looking at that. So whether it is working with construction, electrical wiring, whatever it may be, there's so much of a need for that. But the problem is that there's, you know, a lot of high school graduates are being pushed in the direction of college, and some of the community colleges in particular started to pick up on, instead of saying, you know, get a 2-year degree, we can offer you a certificate in a specialized area. So if one area could be, is actually I teach a certain group of students out of the computer-aided drafting program. So they don't want to be engineers. They just want to help design,
mm-hmm.
At least whatever it may be, you know, a mechanism or some civil engineering product. But they don't want to be the engineer. They just want to be the person that's helping the engineer with the design. So they spend 10 months basically every day. It's about 6 hours that they spend in class of just working with a variety of software that helps them design projects. And after 10 months, they get their internship, and then they're done in a year, and they have their certificate, and most of them end up getting jobs right out of, you know, right out of the program.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, it's the same thing with advanced manufacturing. It's just, though that one is a two-year degree, but again, it's a lot of these students are basically tracked through the program. So as soon as they're done, they're pretty much hired at that, you know, by a manufacturing company.
Well, that's good, and, yeah. and I think that, I mean, even that might be a way to go, you know.
Yeah, there is not there is a huge need for trades, for those who are working trade, and I think it's just trying to give somebody that skill set, you know, to work in that trade again. It could be construction, it could be electronics. Right. At least, you know, looking at more wiring, could be just. You know, welding.
Well, yeah, and things today are more complicated in the things that we buy. I mean, I know one of the biggest things today would, if you could do any kind of computer programming or computer,
yeah,
seems like a lot of young people can do that. I mean, my daughter could take a computer apart and put it back together, even though she never went in that field. But if I ever need some help, I mean, she's right there to give me some help, you know, so... we'll take this call. Morning, Greg.
Hey, good morning, Rick and Tony. Very interesting conversation. I realize you're getting near the end, but I just wanted to pipe in because you guys are so all-inclusive, and we're trying to cover a lot of ground. But just to mention that there are people with special needs, too, and, you know, we're talking about people who have functionability, you know, that are fairly, you know, in the normal range, I'll put in quotation marks, but... If we're not helping each other as a society, what are we doing with ourselves? You know, it's one of the thoughts I think of. And there's a lot of people who may not fit those categories that we're talking about, even though we're trying to be very broad. And those people have wealth and value, too. And our ability to recognize them, I think, is sometimes limited. So that's basically my comment.
Well, it is. But I just want to tell you one thing. I see it every day, Greg. You know, I retired, but I was fortunate enough to, I drive a school bus, not a big one, but, you know, half a bus, and it's for an independent company, and we transport special needs kids to different schools or, you know, or different programs. And I want to tell you something. These kids, even though they have physical, you know, deficiencies, and some can't talk, they're smart kids, and they know what's going on, and you can have a lot of fun with them, and they, at whatever programs they're in at school, you can see that, because I've had the same kids now for 3 years, and I can see the progress that they've made over that time. So there is a niche for everybody, and we should be thinking about that too, you know. And no, you're right. We really should not overlook anybody.
Yeah, and I hear you guys talking about education too, and I got a second degree from a community college, and I see they're reaching out to more of these special audiences too. So, you know, hey, I tip my hat to those organizations as well. And hey, I wish you both a Merry Christmas, and yeah, I'll keep listening.
Thanks, Greg, and a Merry Christmas to you.
Okay, bye now.
Bye-bye. Yeah, you kind of were shaking your head there when
Greg
made that comment.
Yeah, we actually have a really good, strong program through the Center for Access and Assistive Technology for students who need accommodations, whether it is physical or learning it as well. And and definitely when I get those accommodation forms, I work with those students a lot, because I want to see them be successful as well as any other student in my class. And if they need some help outside, definitely work with them. And,
sure.
And they actually end up being really good in the end.
You know, I don't mean to say this in a negative way, or, you know, because some people just can't help it. But so many times, a child in need of some education is a product of their environment. And sometimes that can't be helped. But a lot of times, if someone can intervene, whether it would be a school principal or supervisor or teacher, that child can be turned around to become a good student. And again, I don't mean to denigrate any family or, you know, any mother or father that's bringing up their child, but sometimes they're a product of the environment.
Yeah. And I still think once they get, you know, get into a classroom, especially with me, I try to find what their strengths are and have them build on that. Mm-hmm. And so they can continue at least through the writing aspect and maybe transform that into something else that they want to pursue. Again, whether it be, you know, someone may want to pursue nursing, someone may want to pursue criminal justice, someone may want to just follow a trade, but it's a matter of just trying to find something within that individual.
Sure.
And giving them maybe a little spark of hope here, saying, hey, listen, you can, you know, turn around, you know, work in this direction here, or think about going this
and direction. I even think too in grade school when they're younger, I mean, we can offer so much to so many areas of education or even life today, that I honestly think the reason we lack things is because people don't help. People do not get involved. And if they see a problem, they'll leave it up. Even some parents, they'll leave it. Well, the school's responsible for that. I'm busy. I work a job, and the school's responsible. But you know what? We are all responsible for certain things. And I mean, you just have to do it. And today's world, it's changed so much from when I was growing up.
Yeah, it's not the same as even when, you know, I'm just looking at a generation ago of mid-1980s. I mean, it's not what it was, what you see today.
Right, and it's sad because, you know, we were going to do a show on Christmas memories today. But, you know, I have so many memories when I was a child of not only family, but friends and visiting and just being with people. And today, there's still a faction that does that, but there are so many kids that don't know how to socialize if they're not on the computer. And I mean, it's a sad thing. We're getting into a sad world.
Yeah, come to my classroom. You know, we put the, you know, the smartphones down, and we have conversations. So we have them break. I have them break up into groups that work with activities, so they can learn how to communicate with each other.
Yeah, I remember when I was in high school, the big thing that came out was a Texas Instrument calculator, and we weren't allowed to use it. And now they have such calculators that are so complex that they're allowed to use them in school.
Yeah, it's the graphing calculators. I know, because I had to buy two of them for my daughters, who are now pursuing engineering.
And well, that's it. I mean, things change, but you like to see the social aspect of it kind of stay, and we're losing that. And you know, I personally think that we turned the corner in society back in the late 60s, 68, 69. We just turned a corner from the Leave It to Beaver, Father's Knows Best era to what's progressing today. And, you know, I guess maybe every generation does that. They look back and say, oh, you know, look at what's going on today. And I'm sure it's been going on for a long time. They probably said, well, look at this car running on four wheels. I like my horse better. I don't know.
Yeah,
but
I mean, I'm kind of looking at, you know, I'm product of Generation X. My older daughter's the millennial generation. My younger daughter is Generation Z. In 10 years, it's Generation I, and about 15, 20 years, it's Generation Alpha. So it's kind of, the generations are kind of like being a little more compact, not like every 20 years, it's now becoming every 5 years at this point.
Yeah. Well, listen, Tony, you know, I appreciate you being with us today.
Absolutely.
I mean, you're a great guy, and I love to have you on. As much as you want. I mean, you're even going to be a co-host with another guest at some point. Both Tony and I want to wish everybody a Merry Christmas. We'll be here next Saturday in between before New Year's, but I want everybody to have a Merry Christmas. And if the holiday doesn't meet your expectation, be happy. I put on Facebook this week a song from White Christmas, Bing Crosby, and I really, really believe in this. And the song is "Count Your Blessings Instead mm-hmm. of Sheep When You Lay Your Head Down to Go to Sleep." And I think that's what we all should do. If we have such high expectations, but every day, no matter what situation we're in, there's somebody that's a little worse. So count your blessings and help some people out. So Merry Christmas and enjoy it. And we'll be back next Saturday. Now I am going to put on Polka Magic right now. So, and Merry Christmas to you, John, and your wife. And we'll see you next Saturday also. Take care.